Meditation is one of the most powerful things I've ever learned, and the ability to direct the mind and be in control. And that sums up this podcast. We explore stress, meditation, how to maintain joy and freedom as you age. And as a father, what becomes really important? Is it the money? Is it status? Or is it really just spending quality time with the people that matter? I was talking off here about reading and habits and discipline. And there's something I've been trying lately. So I've lost about 14 kilos now.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's because of that. I don't know if you can see it, where there's like just weights outside my bed. So there's minimal friction to do what needs to be done. But even that wasn't enough. I'd still walk past it. I'll still ignore it and not exercise. So I was like, okay, what if I make it even easier? So I got an exercise band that I start with. So I'm like, oh, Ryan, you might not want to exercise today, but just do the exercise band. Okay, I'll grab the exercise band. Then I'm off and like, oh, well, just pick the weight up. And just pick the weight up. And then just from those two things, moving more, lifting weights, and only diet recently, but mainly just moving more. So what's falling on the wayside in terms of habits at the moment, my friend? What's some aspirational habits you're trying to get back to?
Well, yeah, I'm not getting younger anymore. I'm coming up on 53. So that's the time where you feel things could change. I've had a healthy life and no major health issues. And yeah, it just got me thinking, as I'm growing, as I'm getting older, you just tend to gradually put on weight. And one of the things is, as you know, it's the best thing to do, start now, then leave it for a little longer where it gets really hard. And so I'm doing a few things. I'm just watching what I eat, you know, managing my food intake, and looking at getting back into working out. So I was lucky to have some friends who said, hey, Aaron, let's go cycling. And I haven't done that for ages. So, you know, every weekend or every fortnight we get together and we go cycling. And I just wanting to continue that more. And then, of course, like we were saying, getting back into the weights. So I do a little bit of weights, but it's not regular. So I just need to really, that's the goal for this year. My personal goal is, you know, just lose 10 kilos. You know, I'm just going to feel really, really good. And and just be more active. Just be more active and eat healthy.
It's pretty hard to eat healthy these days because I've stopped processed food completely apart from I go to a restaurant and there's sauce on it. I can't really help whatever the fuck they put on it. But I went to buy some chicken, frozen chicken.
Right.
And I read the ingredients on it, mate. And it's just drumsticks. And it's 89% chicken.
And it's crazy, isn't it? This processed stuff. Absolutely.
It's chicken. Yep. You know what I mean? Multi-diction chicken. And it's chicken. Just they've added all this shit just to make it addictive.
Yeah. What's and they make it now? So, I mean, you're right. It's addictive. Makes it so tasty. And like someone was telling me, it's like, you know, we may put such an effort into taste, which is this one gene on your tongue. Everything, once it's in. You know? But just for that one bit, our taste buds, you know, we'll want soft, you know, some of this not so healthy stuff.
Yeah. Well, I was trying, the biggest change for me. So basically all I eat now is meat, fruit, and eggs. Maybe I'll die because I'm not having vegetables. We'll see. It's a bit of an experiment. But the interesting thing is I crave what I need. I don't crave for the sake of craving anymore. So what initially happened when I started eating this way, I was just like probably too much information, but I was on the toilet all the time because all my gut biome or whatever was just dying. And it was horrific. And then now it's like everything's on point. And I used to like, there's no way I could eat fruit for dessert. That's depressing.
Yeah.
And after eating this for a while, I don't actually even crave carbohydrates and I don't even crave like sugary things anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just think how sick everyone's getting. And it's going to be harder and harder to be an insurance person, I think, because everyone I'm calling, they just got cancer, stroke, diabetes, they're dying. It's mad. What's your view on health and aging? Like, what's it like aging? Just out of curiosity, what's it like to be, did you say 52?
Well, I'm 52 now. Yeah.
What's it like?
Oh, I'm actually fine. I'm really good. And I'd love to be more active than what I used to be. And in the past I've done, you know, different things in my life, from sports and and things and dance and stuff. But it's
dance. It's, wait, jazz hands? Yeah. What kind of dance were you doing?
Well, when I just this was during university, as I got out of university back home in India, I had the opportunity to perform for this open track and field meet in India. It was the Asian track and field, and they wanted dancers for the opening ceremony. Oh, and cool. Then we did it. And we just did stuff in school, as you do. You get a group together, and you start, you dance, and just great stuff. So one of the guys said, hey, why don't we just go and give it a shot? They're looking for dancers. So I went for it. I got selected and went and had an amazing time at the opening and closing ceremony. And then the choreographer invited me to join his dance troupe. So during my college life, I was dancing. I was teaching young kids how to dance, and I was working a bit in his admin. So it was good. It was great fun.
What's dancing? What kind of dancing?
Jazz, hip hop, a bit of modern.
B-boy.
Yeah, not the Bollywood stuff. I could do if I want to, but it was more theater. I wasn't trained, so you know, some of the stuff I do kind of cheat to get it, but some of like hip hop and you know, it was great fun.
Wow, did you go out clubbing? Like, do you still do it now, or what's it?
No, not anymore. Well, we should go as a group because we're choreographed dancers, so it's not that you do, you know, it was like a one man dancer, it was as a group, so we did, you know, and then as pocket money, if there were any theater shows, we'd get involved as dancers there, you know, as background dancers.
Oh yeah, what sort of movie, like theater, like was it like?
Well, theater like
Romeo and Juliet. You're just like pop, pop, pop.
Well, Othello.
Othello.
We did Othello, so which is you know your Sufi dancers and all that involved there. So we were the background dancers, and it was great fun. So some well-known actors in India were the main cast. And so we were the background, so which is great fun, and we were part of those scenes, different parts of the show. So we did stuff like that, you know.
What's it like behind the scenes?
Oh, it's great fun! It's great fun! It's
any
it's
gossip?
Exciting. Oh, yeah. Well, this is all Indian actors, so I probably wouldn't know any. You know. Stuff got relationships happening and affairs happening, all that gossip. Yeah, of course you do hear that.
Wow. So can we do any, like, obviously someone might know this, you know what I mean? Like, might not, because we do clips and then it might go viral in India and then you're just torn up some marriage. Is someone married that's had an affair still?
I wouldn't, this is, I'm talking about 25 years ago. This is a long time, so. You know, so would it not?
I need the tea, brother. I need to know what's going on. And there's what's it like in the celebrity scene in India? What's it compared to, you know, what other people see? What's it really like behind the scenes, mate?
Well, to be honest, I wouldn't know much on that aspect of it. It was just, you know, we were just mostly part of a group of dancers and we got to know people and those kinds of things. So, I mean, you hear a little bit of gossip, like I said, the gossip I just talk, and this is what we've heard, you know. But I wouldn't. From a celebrity scene, this is, I mean, I'm 52 now, so I'm talking when I was 17 years old, which is a long time ago. And during those days in India, there was not so much Western dancing. If you watch some of the, if you'd see any of the old movies, you'd have a song in a movie and the boy and the girl dancing around a tree or dancing in the rain. So it wasn't much of choreographed dancing. But when we came into scene, the choreographer that I worked for, he brought in jazz, hip-hop into India and we'd perform on a regular basis. And then as it goes, and close to my lead, he got involved in the movies, and I actually missed being part of one of the movies that he was involved in. And that kind of took over, and if you look at any Bollywood movie, there's a whole lot of choreographed dancing in movies. So we were kind of the pioneers of Western dance, of jazz, hip-hop.
Wow.
It was great fun, yeah.
Was it like, you know how like they brought rap into America and all the cops would turn up and try to shut them down? Was it like that? Did they think that you guys were inappropriate?
No, no, no. No, none of that sort. No, because it was just not accepted in Indian cinema. And the guy who was I was involved, his name was Shamak Dawa. Now he's quite big in India. He learned overseas. He went to UK to learn, and then when he came back, he started the schools. And we do a lot of corporate gigs. You know, when like for one of my first corporate gigs is when Puma first launched in India. We had a whole fashion show, and we had a few celebrities that were involved. You know, so we dress and we dance, do all that kind of stuff. So it was great fun. It was great fun. You know.
What's the weirdest outfit you had to put on? We did you have to dress as a rock or something?
No, none of that stuff. No. We did actually meet. Well, I wouldn't say it's the worst, but it's quite hard to dance with. So, do you remember Janet Jackson's song "Rhythm Nation"?
Were going to
Have you
say
ever
the
heard of that?
Super Bowl. No, I don't remember it, but I.
Well, it's a bit in, in a whole soldier outfit, and it's staccato dance, and staccato movements and all. And we had to have wear these high boots and all and dance, and it was quite full on. And it took us a while to get kind of adjusted on stage and with big boots and all that.
So
But it
you had
was fun. It was one of my favorite.
like
Big, well,
stiletto
big
like
high,
boots.
yeah. Big. I mean, yeah. So yeah, so it was good fun. Yeah, we had some great times.
Random. And
And I,
you did sports too, you said?
yeah, so I played hockey in India for my college. Played for football. We played cricket, but it was more roadside cricket.
You
But
can't do that in India. You
no,
can't.
well, not anymore.
Not
We'd put
anymore.
stones on the road, put a couple of sticks up, and we'd play. But you can't do that anymore. So that was as growing up. That's what we did. We'd
Yeah.
find a patch and just yeah.
What was
And
India like back then? Because I can't even imagine. I'm interrupting you a bit because we're trying to time this delay thing. But is
yeah.
it so I think of like cricket on the road. Every time a car comes, you got to move. But New Zealand, you see a car once in a moon. But like India, you're just like, what are you like ducking and weaving and trying to hit it?
Yeah.
And some of the kids get
Well,
clipped or.
no, well, that's what in India I say this is, I'm talking about 25, 30 years ago. It was there. So there's the bylanes. You weren't on the main roads. You were like in the small lanes, which is purely residential. So we'd play on the road, and then, if a car came, we'd just move. So, yeah, we did that kind of stuff. And this I'm talking, what's it? I'm 52. So that's true. No, actually, more than 35 years ago. So. It's a
Wow.
while.
What's
No.
how's India changed? Like, what's
Well,
India
I just
like
got
then?
back from India. It's busy. It's crowded. It's chaotic. It's kind of in Bombay. It's like Mumbai. It's organized chaos. I always call it organized chaos, because it's amazing the number of vehicles on the road, but they don't have accidents, or they have a minor dent, but they'll just it'll be like an inch away from each other, and they'll just squeeze through, and they'll be fine. It's
Wow.
crazy.
What else has changed? Like politically, was it any different? Was there caste systems? Were arranged marriages
Oh,
more prevalent back then? Like, what's it like?
well, in
I'm
those
being
days, no,
ignorant.
it's well, there was caste system, no, but that was that's it's outlawed, and it probably is still there around, but it's illegal basically. There's yeah, it's a very secular country. I mean, politically, it's changing now. But we won't get into politics because it's crazy.
They always tell
It's
me
growing.
corruption. That's the real every Indian guy I talk to. The oh, it's corrupted. I hate it.
Everyone has their hands in the pie. Yeah, absolutely. But it's growing a lot. Like this summer when I went down there, there's a lot of construction happening. So they're building a whole lot of roads. They're building metros, both above and underground. So from what I've heard, they're looking at having India be a developed country by 2047. So there's a whole lot of construction. So I went there and I got sick, really. The first 2 weeks were fine. The third and fourth week, I was crook. But there's a whole lot of pollution there. Yeah. But I guess eventually it will look better. Yeah. But there's so many people, and they have so much spending power. There's like, everyone's buying a car or a motorcycle to travel basically. So they really need to grow the roads there for the for people just to use, because the traffic's a nightmare.
Yeah, I think traffic needs to go three dimensional. Like, It's like Elon's trying to do in Las Vegas, where you have tunnels.
Yeah, the tunneling idea. I heard of that too. I wonder if he's still doing it. I haven't heard much about it.
Yeah, they're still doing it. It's not very well. It's called the Boring Company.
The Boring
Company. That's the name that's of it. But,
and it always worries me. It's like, gosh, that's the, you know, California is where the, it's part of the fault line.
Yeah. Yeah, you die. Bro, can you imagine that, eh? Like just being like buried alive, but then
that's the worst. Yeah.
Like what would go through your mind? Let's say you had an earthquake, you're going on your Tesla underground, and there's hope that you could potentially go out because you know it's about 200 meters away. What goes through your brain?
Oh, first panic, and then you have to just calm yourself. Well, in human nature, it's, you know, panic, you know, and if you can just calm yourself down and look for, you know, ways to get out, then, well, hopefully you're not stuck in the sense, you know, and you're not injured, but yeah. Man, but that's going to be a tough one. You pretty much think you're gone.
Yeah. You know? Is there something scarier? What's the worst way to die, you reckon?
Oh, I would say drowning.
Oh.
I would. I'm not the best swimmer. Yeah, and it's funny because my boys, I'm going to just talk about family now, my boys are into water polo. And I've been in really, really involved in helping them be part of it, and, you know, in any trainings they need, I'd wake up early morning and take them there, just, you know, motivate them to be better than they think they are, and they're really good players, and they really enjoyed it. But everyone assumes I've been playing because I'm always there, and I'm a good swimmer, and I'm not. I'm nervous and I panic, so I literally have started going back to swim classes. So, and I say, hey, you know, we live in New Zealand. There's water all around. Everyone needs to know to swim. So I've gone back. I've gone to swim classes. And see, back home in India, with the population, unless you're really well off, you have access to a club where you have a swimming pool. Everyone else who grows there, we had one public pool in Bombay, in Mumbai, and it would take me an hour or so to get there, you know, by bus and walking. Mm. Once you reach there, like the thousands of kids there, how do you learn? So we never learnt. You know?
Did you ever do the blessing? Go on that water that looks pretty clean? Go on the rivers?
Oh, no. Get the blessing. No.
That's wild. A lot of people do that. Yeah. And I heard there's...
it's a religious thing. So some people from Hinduism is the largest religion in India, which is, I think, 83% of the population. So, you know, they believe that you go to the river Ganges and you can clean yourself. So, not me.
No, you don't believe that. Clean.
Well, I'm not that really. I'm not Hindu, so you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's more for a religious thing. Yeah.
There'd be so many dead bodies in it, eh?
Scary.
Yeah.
But it's I think there was a time they were trying to clean the river, but it's just that so many people going there, it's bound to, you know, it's bound to get dirty.
Well, I say I lived in a place with the most polluted river in the world, in my opinion, but it's not. But Manawatu River, and this guy jumped in the tail end of it and it got meningitis. I'm like, yeah, look.
Jeez.
But people probably saying it's completely unfit. Yeah. Interesting. So how do you face, like, you know, you're going swimming, you're learning a skill as an adult. Do you feel embarrassed by it? And if you do, how do you overcome that?
Well, initially I did, you know, so, but now I said, hey, I got to think about myself, so I just do it. And I think it's just, you feel embarrassed in the beginning, but everyone, you know, is happy you're doing it. And I have friends I'm okay with sharing it, because in the past I wouldn't, you know, it was a bit of embarrassing because I'd be in one pool with the boys, and then I wouldn't want to do it while the kids were there. But now it doesn't matter. For me, it's like I'm learning a new skill, and I'm glad I am, because it's important. If I'm in the beach, I know I can handle myself.
Yeah,
I'm not there yet, but I'm semi confident in the water. And the more I do it, the better I'm gonna get.
Yeah, I can imagine. If I was a father, I'd be catastrophizing everything in my head. I'd be like, okay, so if that kid can't swim, we're fucked. Like, you want to save him, but then you're just drowning. Yeah. I'm sure he'd try.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like my son, who's like, we went in Tauranga at Papamoa, and the boys won the nationals under 14. This is a few years ago. So, you know, as part of that, you win national, the coach and the manager jumps into the water with the boys. I was the manager. I jump in. And I could, you know, it was great to see my son being right there. He knew I couldn't swim. He was there just in case.
Did you go by their side? Did you try to, like,
I jumped with the players around. So it wasn't right in the middle of the pool. So it was there. It was for a short period of time, you know. But yeah, I'll manage myself for a period, but after a while, I need to hold something. So this was about four. Was it Ethan's 19 now? So yeah, about 5 years ago.
Yeah, God.
And that got me thinking. It's like, you know, I need to know how to swim. I need to be comfortable. Panic used to get me. So the moment I could swim a bit, but I had to feel the flow.
Well, I mean, honestly, in New Zealand or in Auckland recently, we had someone drown in a street. You know what I mean? Just because of the rain.
Because of the rain, that's right.
It's got to be prepared, mate. I don't think swimming would help, though. If you're going towards the drain, you're going to the drain.
Because it's not too far from where I live, that happened. But, it is. The speed of that water, the current would take anybody, even a strong swimmer.
Yeah. What are you doing to rip? Let's do some pop quiz. So you're caught on a rip. What was your strategy?
Just be what's first, it? Be calm.
So yeah,
not
good
panic. Be calm. Go with the rip. Don't try and fight it. And as it weakens, then I'll try and move sideways away from the rip. And then take your time.
Good man.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There's another strategy too. So that's textbook. Well done. That's 10 out of 10. So right. I used to be a kayak guide, and we, with a kayak, and it's the same with a person, the water's coming towards you. Mm-hmm. When you directly go at it, it pushes you back. But when you go angle to it, pushes you sideways. So you're not actually going against it. So if the rip's coming towards you, you swim towards it on an angle and it'll push you to the waves. So then you don't have to wait till you're like, you know.
Oh, so you swim against the rip, but at an angle. So
yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So then the force is on that side?
On that side, okay. Okay.
Yeah, just good to know, mate. When you go save your son, the polo people, they'll be incredible swimmers if they're in polo. That's mad.
Oh, man, they're absolutely amazing swimmers. I see the stuff they're doing, you know. Kudos to them. That, you know, for someone to egg beat for over an hour and wrestle with another player and hold ball and swim and shoot, it's a tough sport.
Yeah. Why'd they pick it? Dad didn't show them.
Well, my oldest son, because I should be a football coach. I should coach my son's football team. And then Leah, my older one, with any sport he'd try it, whether it's football, cricket, and tennis. And so he'd want to enter. So eventually we just say, hey, boy, you need to just focus on now, you know, a team sport and an individual sport. So he chose tennis and football for a while. And then his mates suddenly say, hey, you want to join and play water polo? This is when he moved to intermediate in year 7. And I was like, he said, I'm going to join. I said, okay. Really? I had no idea what the sport was. I thought it was one of the most boring sports. But he got involved in it. And we're just watching and seeing how the boys do. And I was amazed by it. And ever since then, I got involved big time. So, I mean, I'm in their school committee. I set up a committee to build the sport in the school. You know, if they played for a club, I was involved managing. So it was, I mean, heart and soul into water. It is an amazing sport. And it's a pity it's in New Zealand, it's still a community sport. We need to, you know, we so focus so much on rugby and netball and cricket. There's some, water polo is, you know, if every kid played water polo and the sport they'd love from a fitness level, that'd be awesome. I've had friends whose kids win the first 15 and they say thanks to water polo that, you know, their kids are strong and fit because it's overall development.
Mm. Polo is probably better because, like, rugby, you think about the concussions over a long period of time and what that does to the brain. I used to be a blindside flanker. I stopped. I used to play basketball, but I stopped because I couldn't walk. Because I was just, after every game, I couldn't walk. Yeah, knees and back. I was like, I want to change. But you do miss that competitive edge. Do you find that, like, as you get older in life and you maybe not playing the sporting things, do you miss competition or aggression or, like, the excitement of...
If you start playing, it's like, I tore my ACL. It's a simple thing. It's like I was playing futsal. And, you know, you're in your mind, you still feel you can do the stuff you've done. It's amazing. You know, the body says, hang on a minute. And, So, you know, I think you always are competitive. If you're competitive, you're always competitive. You know, you tend to be sensible as you get older. I think that's one thing. So, like, I don't do as much of that knowing what I've done to my knees. And I'm not, you know, I'm careful now.
Yeah. Well, I've been experimenting with that because, like, I don't really have an outlet for anger. When I used to play team sports, I would channel it towards winning. And I wouldn't go against the rules or any way. I'd just play hard. And then I'll expend all that energy. And that competition and that camaraderie, I think, is something you lose as you get older because you have other obligations. Your body can't keep up with it. Are you conscious in any way about how to still feel alive, you know, still get to touch that part of being younger where you're, like, doing the scary, intense new thing?
No, I think for me, as I've gotten older, and I guess my job is, I tend to be a bit risk averse now. So I do certain things that I'm comfortable with. Like I cycle. So initially cycling on the road was a bit, I was worrying. I wasn't sure I could do it. You know? But I just started cycling when it was much quieter. And now it's reached a stage, okay, I'm comfortable. I'm careful. And, you know, you never know who's on the road. So I stick to one corner, you know, because I see some cyclists who don't care. If there's a car, I'm on the side. I'm more in that sense, you know. Okay, let me be on the side. You know, if I try and be a bit cocky and go in the middle and something happens, it's me who's going to be injured as much as I can, you know, feel that I have a right to be there. So I'm careful in that sense.
Yeah.
I don't try to do it too. Yeah. I think as you get older, and when you have, I guess things change because, you know, you have kids, you have family, you have financial responsibility. You tend to be careful.
Makes sense.
Because it's not you then. It's, you know, your loved ones.
How do you balance that? I talk to fathers a lot about that. Like, they're living their life to provide a level of security for their family, but in actual fact, their family wants a legacy of someone that loved their life. You know, they that sense of duty, but also wanting to be happy. How do you balance that as a father?
Well, being involved with your kids. I mean, I'm fortunate because I'm self-employed, so I'd work around to be there for my kids. You know, be involved, whether it was in musical theater, being involved with them, you know, being there, supporting them. If it was sports, being there for them, you know, not missing any games, taking them to trainings. I'd wake up early at 4:30 in the morning if I had to take them. And that was my time with them. So when I'm driving them, we're talking and we're connecting. So even till this day, we still have conversations. You know, if there's anything they need, they come to me, you know. The young adults now, and they shall come and we'll chat. So, yeah, so it's just building that connection with your kids when they're young, because that's that young age, the kids, I believe the kids remember what you've done for them.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's why I was talking in depth to a psychologist recently. And, yeah, he believes that your upbringing would determine your mental state of mind and your ability to form relationships. So you think if you invest a lot of time into them and you have a stable family unit, that's going to do more than anything else in their life.
Absolutely, because that's all they know. They know their mom and dad have been there for them. You know, with that, and it's not mollycoddling. It's more about, hey, you know, stuff happens. They need to deal with it. I'm not going to go and step in. But it's about just being there, supporting them. Even till this day, I mean, they're 23 and 19. I say, you know, they go enjoy themselves. Anything happens, any issues, call. If you're stuck somewhere, call. We won't judge, you know, we'll have a conversation, but just call us and just being open to that they can call us anytime if they're in trouble.
How do you not lecture them? Oh, sorry, you go.
You know,
it's you just, should do yeah, this. You,
well, I think of myself when I was 20. I never listened to what my folks said. When I was a teenager, I wouldn't listen. So, you know, you can say whatever. It's just, I guess it's being sensible on how you say it. So it's just, you cannot just go berserk and it's not going to help.
Have you ever snapped? Was anger hard? I remember talking to this guy. He had a kid, young kid, and he's like, I'm just so angry at it, but it doesn't deserve it, but I don't know what to do with my anger.
I think I've had a few instances, you know, when the kids were young, it's like, you're frustrated and all that. Yeah. But like I said, it's like as a father, you don't know how to deal with this stuff. You know, you don't learn this. So you just, you figure it out and you'll make mistakes and you learn from that and you think, okay, maybe this wasn't the right thing to say or do. You know, as long as you're aware of that, that's the way I think it's like.
What awareness has changed over the years? So when you first found out, okay, fuck, she's pregnant. Okay, what am I going to do with my life? I'm in up for this and just meltdown. And then you had the baby and you're like, this is so fragile. It just, if I drop it, it's dead. What went through your mind at the different stages?
Wow. Yeah, I think once you have a child, I think you're carefree when you're young, or even with your wife partner. I think once you have a child, it suddenly changes. It's just there's something in you. That's what happened to me. Something in your head changes, and you suddenly have this little bundle of joy. You know, it's kind of helpless. It's like, you know, you're there. And yeah, you just, I think that's when things change for me. Because earlier was one of those guys that said, okay, you know, I want a good job, I want a secure job, and that's all. I'll be happy. And then once a kid came, and then you say, oh, shucks, I've got responsibilities. I've got to figure out, okay, how do I do well, what I do? And then just reading books, and I've started learning about, okay, actually, I want to learn how to invest. I want to learn how to be self-employed. That all came when my first son was born. Just reading books, and that changed who I am today, because now I'm really comfortable being self-employed and not knowing what next month will bring it, because as a self-employed, you know, as you, more clients you get, the more you learn. If you don't work, you don't get some. So it's, I remember reading, actually this is in 2000, actually when my oldest son Liam was born, reading Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. It was one of the books that I used to be a flight attendant. That's another thing I'm not told you about. So I used to be a flight attendant. And one of my go-to things on a layover, if I was by myself and no friends, is I'd go find a coffee shop or go to the bookstore, which had a coffee shop, look at books and just browse. That was my, you know, couple of hours of to do and then go do other things. And then just finding these books and reading it, and it interested me, and just learning from them. And that's when I kind of shifted and said, okay, I'm working for a company. There'll be a time I would love to do something on my own, love to invest, but things like that. Yeah.
What have been important books that have shaped your life?
I think Rich Dad Poor Dad was one of the biggest ones. Well, just the Dale Carnegie books. How to Win Friends and Influence People. The kind of old classics, Power of Positive Thinking, you know, things like that. The Richest Man in Babylon, that's another very good book I read. Yeah, which I'm reading again now, actually. I'm reading the audio book of it. But yeah, those are some of the books that I really, really enjoyed. I started thinking, maybe think differently.
It's interesting, the Richest Man in Babylon, I think that's how he said it. I was looking at a lot of the principles, you know, lend money to people that pay you back. And actually what they describe as a managed fund, because I used to be an investment advisor.
Right.
And it's like, so lend money to people that will pay you back, diversify your investment, and business.
Keep a percentage of your money that you earn separately. Let it grow. You know, build.
It's crazy because of... How much of how much of all you need to know has already been said? Like, you don't consistently work at one thing and try to get better every day. You'd be 37 times better at the end of the year if you increase 1%. And you just think, like, even if you didn't know how to build and demolish a building, and your job was to demolish the Sky Tower, and all you had was your hands and a hammer, you would demolish that if you had an indefinite amount of time and you just consistently did it every day. And then you ask someone, hey, this is how I'm using the hammer. Is there a better way to do it? And then doesn't matter what it is. Has there been things in business or rituals that you've found that sound boring, but in reality are the most important things?
Well, this took me a while to learn because, you know, I was one of these guys who wanted to learn more, but I would struggle to apply them. And that's the toughest is that because, you know, you can overanalyze, you want to know everything. And it took me a long time to figure that out. Hey, listen, if you learn something, go try it. You make mistakes, that's fine. But you're learning from that and get better. And it took me a while to get to that. And that's one of the things, you know, it's like none of us knows everything. Whatever you literally know, you go and apply it, learn from that, make a mistake, get better, apply again. And that's one of those, yeah. Now, this is one of the business rituals I do. It's like, you know, if I find something I want, okay, let's try it. Okay, let's do it. And then learn from it, get better and better, and ask for help if you need.
Yeah, I think, like, if you just use a simple example, if you read a book about cold calling or you make 10,000 cold calls, which one's going to make you better?
Yeah.
And I think that's been the biggest lesson is, like, my goal. So my only vision is to help people live fulfilling lives, but my actual goal is to have the work shape me into the man I want to be. So I'm not actually concerned about the outcome. I'm concerned with the actions I take that shape me, because the work teaches me more than me learning about the work. Like I change most from the action. So it sounds like you have a mental model, or at least maybe from younger, where there can be some nervousness around doing things and some fear or some concern of judgment. What do you think that stems from, that you know, apprehension, but you've forced yourself to do it anyways?
I think it was, like, as a kid, I was extremely a shy boy, a very quiet boy, so I never wanted to venture, you know, trying to do something. So that's my upbringing. My dad was very quiet, my mom was more outgoing, but to a certain level. So I think it's upbringing. So you tend to, and we can learn all this stuff. So this is who we are, but that doesn't determine your future. That's the way I look at it. Every individual needs to learn and find out things and learn the skills. Once you know the skills, you get better and you learn more skills after that. So that's the important part, I think, as an individual. Each one of us needs to do it. So just look to improve, look to get better and better. And we always look at someone else and say, oh, you know, he's lucky how well he's done. But, you know, we don't know what he's gone through, she's gone through.
Yeah. Well, you have quite a lot of self-awareness, it seems, and a willingness to admit it. So a sense of humility. What do you think has been quite helpful in you understanding the things holding you back and then still doing it?
It's just being aware. I think it took me a while, so it's nothing, you know, it's not that I was perfect. You know, I wish I'd known this earlier. You know, it takes a while. I think as you get older, you figure this out. I mean, for a long time, you try all these things and it doesn't work, or you read all this stuff, it doesn't work, until you put it in action. So that's the thing. And like I think I read it somewhere, says it, no. Everyone says, knowledge is power. You read and, you know, you're good. It's not knowledge that is power. It's applied knowledge that's power. So you do something about what you've learned and learn from and get better.
That's the challenge. I think there was a book, I think it's called The War of Art, and it only has one point. And it's like, ignore your rationalizations and take the action. But that's a very tricky thing. So you've got a brain that's learned how to stay a certain way. That's its job. Efficiently stay the way it is. And then you have something else that's trying to take you away from what you are. So you start making up the excuses. Oh, like, I just need to know more. I'm not ready yet. I need more money. I don't have the resources. You know, it's some reason, some justification. What do you do? What's the framework you use in your mind to talk yourself through the fear or the rationalization?
I don't have any framework, actually. But I think it's just, I guess you just talk to yourself. I have no idea, actually. I have no rationalization. I think it's, this is something I've learned over the years also. It's like, you know, you kind of get to the realization we are a sum of our experiences. So what stuff happened in the past creates that reality. And then you have these blinders that you put on. And I guess once you realize, actually, they're just experiences, you know, that does not make you be somebody because of that. And you come to the realization, actually, you know, let me just try it, see if it works, you know, give it a shot. And I think that's how you move forward.
It's crazy how few genuine consequences there are for any action. So you think if you do something you regret, and there you get judgment from a person, you get shame from someone else, or maybe you lose some money. The reality is, apart from maybe serious harm or death, nearly everything can be resolved or replaced. You know, whether it's a partner, you could say you say something you regret, you know, you voice some doubt that you have on the way they're communicating with you and you feel a lack of connection, but you're afraid to talk to them because of fear of losing them. And then you express it, and then you might say it the wrong way, but you can adjust it. You can say it. You can fix it. Or you have brought more of who you are, and then you can replace them with someone that is more attuned to who you are and loves you for you. So I don't believe there's really any even the sense of duty as a father. Let's say you failed financially, completely lost everything, and you guys don't even have a house. You could find some shelter. You could go to the supermarket bins and get out fresh food. The only thing that makes that horrific is the projections of judgments you think other people have, the status that you feel that you've lost. So do you ever think of like minimizing consequences or framing it a different way? Or what's something that you find helpful to not get overwhelmed and stressed and overthink things? Dance, jazz hands.
That's a tough question. Well, could you just say it again? Just let me.
Yeah. How do you deal with stress, and how do you stop yourself getting overwhelmed and snowballing down like a bad thought?
Oh, that's easy. I meditate. I meditate. Because it calms you down. Because when you're stressed, you're on a flight or fight mode. I think that's what you tend to be irrational. You just react to stuff. But just taking some time off, breathing, meditating helps. You know, something comes up. There's always an answer. There's always something that comes up, as long as you take some time. So I'm a big believer in a follow meditation. I meditate every day.
Yeah, I've been meditating the whole time you've been talking.
That's it. That's your meditation.
Genuinely. Yeah, I think people, I think it's valuable to sit and focus on your breath and just observe things as they pass. I think where it's most useful is an intense external focus. So if I focus on you, your mannerisms, the way you're communicating, and my breath, because a lot of, especially with technology, you stop breathing. Like email apnea, you tighten your chest, and you'll notice with stress, you breathe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what does meditation mean to you, and what does it look like?
Well, my meditation is just, just spending 20 minutes closing my eyes and just breathing. I use a form of meditation that I learned. That's transcendental meditation. So that's, and I've tried different ones. I've done all sorts of different, and I found this one eventually to work really well because it's quite simple and easy. And everyone who thinks they can't meditate, you know, I just tell them, you will always have thoughts. Meditation is not being a mind completely blank, or you will always have thoughts. And that's part of meditation. And you just acknowledge the thoughts and you move on and you go back to your breathing. But it's all about breathing. And when you meditate and breathe, you just relax your entire body. And you get opportunities, you get clarity. Yeah. You know, I sometimes if I have time and I've reached a client's house and I've got, say, 15 minutes or 20 minutes before, I'll just meditate for 10 minutes. And I kid you not, it just frees you, because then you've got the clarity, you're right with the client, you're chatting with him, the client, you understand exactly what he's saying, and the right words come out without you even trying to do anything or say anything. It's just being present. That's what it just allows you to. And you just, it helps reduce stress. It really helps reduce stress. And we, it's like, you know, we work out, we, you know, we go to the gym and work every part of our body. You know, what about the mind?
Preach.
You know, you gotta keep, you know, because we're bombarded with so much media and negative stuff, you know, that you need to give time to yourself and just, you know, calm down and just be comfortable with ourselves. Just you know, be with it.
I think it's the most valuable thing I've ever learned is the ability to steer my mind from repetition through breathing. What have you found in meditation? What have you reached part of yourselves that you didn't expect? Did you connect with something in a way you didn't expect? Or what has been your learnings from meditation?
I think it's just the ability to respond to situations versus just react to everything. That's one of the biggest things I've got out of it. So I can be calm, and I don't flare up, but and sometimes you, like everyone, you just, you know, you reach a stage. But it's like with things with my wife or with my kids, I'm able to just have a conversation with them. I know it's a, you know, things that can be busy if something's, you know, troubling them, but just, you know, sitting with them and chatting so they can calm down and they can be comfortable. And they get then what I'm saying versus me, like you said, you know, giving them lectures. Because kids won't hear it, but if you have a conversation with them, just be calm about it. They talk to you. You kind of find out more about what's happening in their lives.
It's interesting how much spice we add to the negativity. So you think you've got this meal of frustration. You feel it. You have a sensation of tightness in your chest and your shoulders, and maybe you're scrunched up and your fists are clenched. And then you add a thought to it, a bit of spice. Where you're like, oh, I'm frustrated because, and that's because of this. And it goes bang, bang, bang. And the meal gets bigger. And then you get tighter and more frustrated. And it just snowballs. But just the idea of observing it without adding anything onto it, the meal gets smaller. And then the meal no longer has meaning. It's just you have a sensation. It's quite abstract. How would you explain that in a simple way to people that don't meditate? I've had two curious come through while we're talking. I'm locked in.
All right. Oh, I think it's meditation is a simple, it can be as simple as just taking time to yourself and breathing. It could be as simple as that. And the more you breathe, the more oxygen is in your body, the more relaxed are you, and the more you can deal with stuff. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
So it allows you. It allows you not to react. And, you know, they always talk about, okay, count to 10 before you say something. Because sometimes you say something you regret immediately. And it's the same thing. It's just, you're counting to 10 is just breathing, just taking some time. And then you're not in the heat of the moment. And you can kind of know, you know what to say. You know the right thing to say.
It's wild. I'm pretty sure I had like a 30% increase in sales on the days I meditated compared to the ones I didn't. Because that
I used to.
It's wild, huh? It's
wild.
Because I find a lot of in selling is knowing when not to talk. Like we said, we used to call it the silent clothes, and I'm not saying I'd use it nowadays sometimes, but there was this small girl, she was 20, she's like fucking 4'11", and she'd make like these really successful businessmen really uncomfortable, and they would just buy. And one of the things she would do is after she asked for the clothes, you just sit there in silence.
That's whoever breaks that silence loses.
And then you're training someone and they start talking. You're like, fuck, I didn't need your help there, mate. But anyways, we've done a whole podcast, mate. So thank you for coming on.
Cheers. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Really cool.